A great pleasure to once again speak to Susie Essman, who not only is starring in Last of the Red Hot Lovers here at Williamstown on the Nico stage, but also we'll be doing a night with Susie Essman, Susie with an S, on the main stage on Monday, July 23rd at 7:30, and it's a great pleasure to welcome back Susie Essman. We love having you on the show.
Well, I love to be on the show because you know I'm a hometown girl.
How's everything going in the hometown? Are you commuting back and forth?
Right now I'm commuting. Once we're in production, I rented a place here because I can't drive at night on these roads.
You're gonna hit a deer. You know that's going to happen, inevitably.
I hit a chipmunk the other day and I burst into tears. Oh, it was horrible. It just ran. It was on the thruway and it just ran in front of the car and I just was so upset.
My wife always says when that happens is, well, he didn't look both ways. How did you decide to do this? From my understanding, theater was something that you've wanted to do but haven't done a lot of.
No, I actually have not been on stage live for, I don't know, I think since I did Princess and the Gumdrop Dragon in third grade. Actually, that's not true. I was the Wicked Witch of the West in fourth grade. I know it's shocking to hear that I was typecast as the witch. But I'm not a stage actress, and they offered me the part, and it felt like a tremendous challenge and something that I have never done before, and I was just scared to death. So I always feel like if you're really, really scared, you should do it.
Because that's a lot what stand-up comedy is being just scared to death, right? Especially in those first formative years.
I'm still scared to death every time I get on stage. The difference is, in stand-up comedy, I've been doing it for almost 29 years. I really know what I'm doing. Stage, Neil Simon, it's a little bit more challenging, but it's been really, it's been a lot of work, but a lot of fun.
Just on the face of it, I would think the average theater goer looking at a poster and say, oh, Susie Essman is in a Neil Simon play. That seems to make sense.
Well, yeah, and the character makes sense. The character is like a wisecracking, whiskey-drinking, cigarette-smoking sex pot. You know, she's not Susie Green from Curb Your Enthusiasm, but she's got a little bit of that nasty kind of, you know, thing in her.
So you have found it relatively easy to tap into that side of your personality.
She's a little bit sadder than Susie Green. Susie Green's such a confident character, and Elaine Navazio, who I'm playing, seems to be a little bit more defensive. I'm finding a lot of different colors in her, which is interesting.
What is it like working with Jessica Stone and her take on this work that has been around for a long time, but is I don't think has been done recently.
No, it hasn't. Well, I'm sure there have been regional revivals and things like that because it's really such a great play. Jessica, first of all, for me, Jessica is a lifesaver because she knows theater. And she's just, you know, I'm just baby steps. So she's just been helping me tremendously. And I'm amazed at the vision she has. She sees things in a very complete way. I mean, I'm just working on my act and my character and my lines. And she has a vision of the arc of the whole play, which is amazing how she keeps it in her head. And I think she's got a kind of an original take on the play.
Hey, you haven't done it in front of an audience yet, right?
No.
So do you think that experience of waiting for the laugh and then sort of letting it ride and then go, I mean, that will be comfortable for you?
That's something I know how to do. And I also think that I'll get very energized once there's an audience there. I know what it's like to work live, even though stand-up is so different than theater. It's still the energy you get from an audience, and it's not like anything else you can imagine.
The pluses and the minuses are I would think, would cancel each other out in the sense of, okay, you get to be all by yourself on stage. You get to be in control. A lot of us like that control. We want that control. And yet here you have an environment that is very collaborative and you get to work off somebody and there is a net.
The net is a script, basically. When I'm doing stand-up, it's all my responsibility. I wrote everything that came out of my mouth. I thought of everything that came out of my mouth. Here I'm interpreting somebody else's words. And that's a challenge for me. I'm not really used to that. You know, on Curb, we improvise everything. So even though Larry writes the outlines and it's Larry's idea, even then what comes out of my mouth is my thought process and my idea. So this is a completely different way to work. I'm getting more comfortable. Today was like my best rehearsal yet, and I felt more comfortable. And I think by showtime next week, it'll be there. And I think to hear that first laugh, as it always is just going to be thrilling.
Also, when you finish your run, you're going to be doing the show on the main stage. It's a benefit for Williamstown. You're also going to be doing a benefit for Hurricane Irene victims later on in the summer, in August. And again, so when you're all done, you get to go back on stage and do what you do.
And you know what that's going to feel like? The benefit on the 23rd in Williamstown, after being on script and working for 3 weeks of rehearsal and 2 weeks of performance, I'm going to get on that stage and I am going to blow it out. It's going to be wild. I know it already. And I have another challenge. You know, Lewis, I don't know if I'm sold out or not. I don't think I'm totally sold out, but Lewis Black is sold out for his fundraiser. Very good friend of mine, as he should be. He's hilarious. But you know what, Albanians? I live here, and if you don't show up for me, it's a total and complete embarrassment and a humiliation.
You know, originally when we were setting up these interviews, they wanted the two of you together so you could work off one another, which I thought, well, that would be great. But the schedules didn't work out. But I assume the two of you would – have you worked together?
Oh, many times. We're friends for many, many years, yes.
And similar styles, and yet – Yeah,
I always wanted to do a TV show with Lewis, you know, that we're like an estranged couple or something, or, you know, a divorced couple or so. I just thought the two of us would always have a great chemistry. So maybe that'll still happen at some point.
Do you, when you're done with this, then what is next? Do you have a constant tour schedule, or do you make that very defined?
I try not to work too much, Joe. I have a lot of gigs coming up in the fall. I have the Bel Air Music Festival, which is the other benefit. I'll be at Bay Street Theater in Sag Harbor. And then I'm just like booked in the fall. I can't even remember. I just have a lot of stand-up coming up. And I'm just waiting till Larry decides to come back for season 9.
So if Larry David calls up and says season 9, then what's the turnaround on that?
Usually very quickly, and he just expects us all to just be available whenever he calls. And you know what? We are, because it's the greatest job in the world. We love him, and I can't imagine anything I'd rather do than do Curb.
You talked about how he will give you an outline. From the time you get that outline to the time that you were in front of the camera, you have how long to sort of pore over it?
Well, actually, none of the actors get the outlines. I get the outlines and Jeff gets the outlines, but none of the guest stars get the outlines. So they don't even know. They just show up on the set that day and they're told, okay, this is what the scene is about. And then they have to just go from there. One of the reasons why Larry gives me the outlines, one of the reasons he doesn't give other people the outlines, is he doesn't want people coming up with, you know, bad sitcom lines in their head the night before. Lying in bed, you're thinking, oh, this will be funny, or this will be funny. He wants it to all be improvised and completely natural. He says he gives them to me because he says I don't do that. I kind of do it, but I do it so it doesn't show.
And does it work because it seems real and spontaneous because it is, and also because, I mean, at the end of the day, you're trying to be funny.
Well, no, I'm never trying to be funny. I'm always trying to be in the scene. Here's the reason it works is because Larry David is a genius with story. And he sets up the story in such a way that it's going to be funny. It is a true situation comedy because there's no dialogue written. And one of the joys of working with Larry for me is that I never have to think about being funny, because I know that if he set it up, it's going to be funny. So I just have to put on my outfits, you know, those crazy Susie Green wacky outfits, get into character, and then just go with my intent in the scene and just be who I am in the scene. And I know my relationships and I know what I have to accomplish. So I never think about being funny. Once you think about being funny, that's the kiss of death. Then you're not funny anymore.
But you obviously, that's the point though, right? You're going to be that, you want it to be a funny show ultimately.
Yeah, but I know who Susie is, and she's always going to be over the top, and she's always going to be so true to her anger, and she's always going to be use them as her foil. So Larry sets it up so it'll be funny. So I just think about how I feel, and, you know, I want to get him the hell out of my house, and I want, you know, all that kind of stuff. I don't think about, oh, this is funny, I'll do this. I just go with the scene, and that ends up being funny.
How did you first meet Larry David?
We first met at the bar at Catch a Rising Star. I would say it was 1985 or something like that. And he had been around a long time. And, it was his birthday the other day. I forgot to call him. I just realized that. He's a little older than me. And he would just lament his failures with women at the bar to me and Joy Behar. Just constantly be talking to us about, oh, this didn't work with this woman, and asking our advice. And, you know, he always did the wrong thing. He was, you know, George Costanza. I mean, George was based on all of those attributes of Larry. So that's where I first met Larry.
And at that point, did you think, ultimately, he went on to do what he did, which was very much a reflection of himself, and you now working with him, somewhat a reflection of yourself.
Well, interesting. If I had said to all the comedians at the bar at Catch a Rising Star in 1985, 1986, if I had said to all of them, Larry David is going to be more successful and richer than all of us put together, nobody would have believed it. Nobody would have believed it, because he just was not. He lived in a studio apartment in Manhattan Plaza in the West Side. He was not that kind of a guy. He wasn't ambitious. He wasn't driven. He was brilliant. He was a brilliant comedian, and we all went in the room to watch him because his material was so amazing, even though he had no ability to connect to an audience and would just storm off stage at the slight. If one person wasn't listening to him or, like, looked at their watch, he would just storm off the stage like a crazy person. But what happened to him was so fortuitous and so incredible, because he deserved it. His brain deserved it. And he just didn't have that kind of personality that you would have thought, this guy's going to be amazingly successful.
Because in retrospect, you hear him referred to as a comedian's comedian, and I'm not sure I never knew what that meant. I hear Gary Shandling referred to that way as well.
A comedian's comedian is basically the comedian that all the comedians get, but the audience doesn't necessarily always know what they're doing. That it's another level. It's in another place. It's transcendent, almost, which is, I think, true about Larry. And I say this, you know, not lightly. I really believe that Larry's a genius. And I know that when I have a comedy brain, I read those outlines and I can't even see how he got to where he got to. His brain works in another place. And I do think it's transcendent.
When you are doing a season of that show and you see what Susie's up to, and do you know how the season is going to end when you get those outlines? Do you get the full outline?
I usually get all 10. Or sometimes they'll come in dribs and drabs. But usually I'll call him and I'll ask him stuff and he'll tell me. But he doesn't always know. You know, he doesn't always know. But we have all 10 outlines done before we start shooting episode 1. So there's always a couple of arcs going on per season. I just never know what he's going to come up with.
Because it seems what's so great about that show and your work as an ensemble is that it comes to a conclusion. Sometimes so many things have great premise and they're very funny, and yet the payoff isn't there. The finality of it doesn't come in hilarity. But you seem to have that down cold.
Yeah, Larry has a very beginning, middle, end kind of brain. I mean, for example, last season, I knew we were shooting in New York and I knew why we were coming to New York. I had no idea that somewhere in the midst of Manhattan, I'd be having an orgasm in the car seat with Larry. You know, so some things I know, some things are a total surprise.
Susie with an S is July 23rd on the main stage.
Mature audiences only, please. Don't bring your kids.
Yeah. Have you always worked that way?
Yeah. Yes. I'm not a mime, and I'm not a juggler.
And that's the way you express yourself, and that's it.
Exactly.
Susie with an S, A Night with Susie Essman on the main stage, Monday, July 23rd at 7:30. You can find out more information at wtfestival.org, wtfestival.org. Susie Essman, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.